because one of my big missions as a chef is making sure that food is not only accessible to as many people as possible, but sustainable within whatever communities that I serve. So even just the same as being a personal trainer and saying, follow this diet for X amount of weeks and expect these results, it's not sustainable if you don't like what you're eating. You're going to fall off the wagon every day. And I knew also that I didn't have an interest in becoming a dietitian. So as much as I love my mother and who had, you know, made her career in education, traditional school was not for me. I made it out of undergrad in 3 years with my bachelor's, and I did not look back. So I knew that going the medical route was far beyond my scope of interest. So learning to become a nutrition coach, I learned to be able to integrate those diagnoses from registered dietitians and just primary doctors and physicians in general. And again, create sustainable meal plans for people that would help them promote their health goals. And I realized also that part of that sustainability was being able to teach people how to do.
Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where we dive deep into the mind shaping the future of industries through innovation, creativity, and groundbreaking research. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I am your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, we're delighted to have Lauren Gresham, affectionately known as Chef L, join us. Born and raised in Buffalo, New York, Chef L has been stirring up the culinary scene since she founded her first business, Ravel Culinary Creations, in 2011, at the age of 20. From gourmet baked goods to expanding into catering, private chef work, and restaurant menu development, Chef L has broadened her horizons and made significant strides in her community. A graduate of the French Culinary Institute, Chef L has relentlessly pursued her passion. Under Ravel, she founded a second business named Core Cuisine, which offers local meal prep and nutrition education services. Notably, she became the first Black woman in Buffalo to own a commissary kitchen, further cementing her role as a trailblazer in the industry. Beyond her business acumen, Chef L is deeply committed to community engagement, providing cooking and nutrition education classes in collaboration with local organizations. Her work emphasizes inclusivity and accessibility, ensuring that her services are available to all, regardless of their economic situation. Welcome to Innovation Insights,
thank you,
Lauren,
for having me.
Or Chef L. How are you?
Well. How are you?
I'm great. I'm just delighted to have you on here. I've heard so much about you over the years. I know your mother and gotten to know her very well and have enjoyed working with her and our friendship. And during those conversations, she's told me about your business. And I thought, I need to have Lauren on the podcast. So thank you for humoring me.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Oh, of course. So would you tell us a little bit about your background and, you know, how you started off and then evolved into Chef
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess background as far as what led me to becoming a chef, I've always loved cooking. Quite literally ever since I could reach the counter, my mother would have me beside her. And it was in the little details of holiday dinners, like sitting in the kitchen, where my mom would tell everybody to get out so she could focus and she should cook. But I would be like tucked away in the corner. Can I just watch? And just watching became snapping beans and chopping herbs and all those different things. And as great of a cook as my mother is, she was also really great with presentation. So I couldn't just snap the beans. I had to know how to do it correctly. I had to know how to hold my knife correctly. So my mother was as much about education in the classroom as she was in the kitchen. So she definitely taught me most of what I knew, but it was always, it never felt like work. It never felt like a chore. It was always something I was happy to do. at about 8 or 9, she let me start experimenting in the kitchen on my own. And I tried to, I remember my first recipe was a brownie recipe that I tried to create myself. And I was mixing something because it definitely came out more as fudge than a brownie, but it wasn't bad. I knew that there was promise, even in the failures back then. And fast forward to, it was actually 2012. So September of 2012, I started Revel after coming home from college. I'm a graduate of Stony Brook University and came home, didn't really want to enter the corporate workforce. But I knew I made a really good brownie correctly at this point and decided to try to monetize some of my baked goods. And it took off. Everything went really well. So in the fall of 2013, I started a culinary school. And it was really just to hone the skills that my mother had taught me over the years and to really understand the instructions that I would just read from all these cookbooks that I had around me growing up, just to get that firsthand experience from true professional. So graduating the next year, I came home and was really ready and willing to do anything. I did a lot of in-home events, and that really propelled me to work one-on-one with people. So be it a cooking class or just private chef work, I realized very quickly that the restaurant wasn't for me. But again, as I said before, neither was a corporate job. So it just became me carving my own path and creating my career through Revel. And that had evolved into nutrition education. And that falls back again on my background because being raised in the Seventh-day Adventist church, there is a lot of emphasis on health and wellness. So that's something that had always been a part of me. So back forward to 2016, when veganism is becoming popular and all these different diets are now trending and social media is picking up and information is everywhere. And I recognized it as misinformation. I decided to start something that would not only feed people and promote a healthier lifestyle, but also be able to educate. So that moved my business more into the culinary education space. So we get here today where most of my work is working with different demographics to teach cooking classes all the way from age 2. And I've had clients well into their elderly years. So that is where I'm at now. And that is, I'm blessed to say that I'm still 12 years later, absolutely loving to be in the space that I'm in.
Oh, what a fabulous journey that you've taken. And I love that you've carved out your own niche and you're offering classes. It's expanding that business because teaching, as you probably have heard, with a mother that's in education, it has its own set of challenges and learning curves. And so what did you learn when you started to expand your business into the education niche?
What can I say? What did I learn when I expanded into education? I learned that people have to be willing to learn. So as a student, I always adopt the mindset and the idea that my best professors were the ones that were willing to learn, either from the students or to continue their education. And so that was always something I went in promising myself, that I would be willing to learn from my students no matter who I was teaching. But what I realized is that people will seek out services or a cooking class just to come in and tell me, oh, I know how to do that. I know how to cook. I've done this. So I meet a lot of resistance from people who don't think that there is more than one way to do something in the kitchen. So it had moved me to always try to incorporate the lesson that food is a great equalizer and that it can look different across cultures, and really just encourage people to use the kitchen as more of an experimental space, not only just for culinary purposes, but for self-discovery and breaking down some of our old barriers. So when you take the lesson beyond the kitchen and find ways to apply it to their life and lifestyles, I get a lot more reception from my clients in terms of them bringing me back and becoming repeat clients, as well as the things that they absorb and retain.
Oh, that's interesting that self-discovery and you helping people navigate through that. Yes, and food is something that we all can relate to, too. Yeah. So tell us about the commissionary, your commissary kitchen.
So let's see, about 4 years ago, the idea of ghost kitchens came to Buffalo, New York, which is where I'm located. And a ghost kitchen is just somewhere that sometimes a major corporation or even all the way down to a small business will rent a kitchen suite in a larger building for the purpose of takeout operations or just having somewhere to ground their food truck or their catering or anything like that. So Buffalo brought this building to the west side of the city back in 4 years ago. So just before 2020, it was 2019. And I was fortunate enough, there's only about 12 kitchens in the building and there are hundreds of food businesses and especially small food businesses in Buffalo, New York. And I was one of the lucky dozen to embark on this journey with the developers for this first time project. It was the first time Buffalo had ever seen something like this. But I was adamant in telling my landlord as we were doing the building walkthrough and he's asking about my business and what would I use it for. My purpose was to help elevate other minority businesses, any business, honestly, but I have a particular interest in serving minority businesses as well as women-owned businesses and helping them promote and propel their brands. Because at that point, I had a really good footing in the community. I had all the contracts and team that I wanted to at the time. And I felt that it was the perfect opportunity for me to start to leverage and just lift others up as I continue to climb within my career.
Oh, and so are people able to come in and rent space from you or use your space? And then what were some of the projects that people were doing in the space?
Yes, so they were able to come in and rent space from me either for a short term, like a one day thing, all the way up to, I've had a tenant with me really since the beginning. So she's been there with me about 4 years and she just runs her catering and meal prep operations consistently. But I've had people do things as small as culinary photo shoots or commercials. So if they were trying to promote their brand via commercial, they've come in and done that. I've had a bartending company that wanted to come in and do a live and teach people how to make drinks in their home. That was at the height of COVID. So at-home happy hours were big for them then. We have a farmer's market on site at the building. So I've had people come in and sell their baked goods or just promote their business in any way that it promoted pertains to the culinary industry. And then I've also had a number of people over the years come in and use it as a space for their takeout operation. So they'll do pickup and delivery for fast food type of operations there.
What an innovative business model. And so smart of you to expand to different types of people using your business. That's really smart. And so the pandemic, though, because you started this right before the pandemic. How did that impact or enhance or provide new opportunities?
I should say I got my keys to the space in October of 2019. So that same month, I found out that I was pregnant with my daughter. And 6 months and some, not quite, but March of 2020, right? However many months that is, the world shut down, right? So I couldn't panic for the sake of my child and not wanting to stress too much. It wasn't a possibility, right? So I knew I was going in with this model to want to provide a space for other people to run their businesses. So I was confident that I would at least make the rent, even if I wasn't making the profit. But being a food service provider, I was considered an essential worker. So we had the Department of Homeland Security come and do a base in Buffalo for COVID testing and other government operations. And I was actually blessed with the opportunity to provide meals on site for that base during COVID. So that spanned a good couple of months and lasted me up until the services were able to start to reopen. And again, essential services. One of the companies I work with is a health and wellness company that provides services for a large myriad of different people. But one of the things they provide is medicinal care, be it general practitioners having their doctors on site or therapy services, mental health services, and alternative wellness services. And because I had a tenure with them of a couple of years, and again, because food service was essential, I was able to go back to start to provide meals for them. So to be honest, I was grateful to say that while I lost a significant amount of business, honestly, it was about 80% of the normal business traffic that I had completely shut down, because I also do a lot of work with our Buffalo Public School System, providing culinary enrichment. So that was over as far as I knew at the time, but I didn't lose it all. And so that was able to sustain me. And then when things opened up, so many people were so anxious to get back to work, and so many people didn't have the space to do it. Again, just knowing that I was walking in with this vision for my business, it was just a matter of time for waiting until people were allowed to go back to work. And as soon as people were allowed to go back to work, I had business wrapping up again.
Such a smart businesswoman, able to pivot, make it through the pandemic. I feel that anyone that made it through the pandemic with their business, and especially a new business, we've seen the rough, and then being able to say, oh, let's collaborate with this group or that group and look at the target market difference. Congratulations on all of that. Just big kudos to you for that. And so I also love that you work with nutrition education, and especially with your sub business or your second business, Core Cuisine. Can you talk about that and how you integrate culinary skills with nutrition?
I found in 2020, we all had extra time on our hands. And that was when I discovered the nutrition education program through the International School of International Sports Sciences Association. I'm sorry. ISSA is what they're more so known as. And I thought their organization was just something that helped personal trainers gain their certification to work with people in gyms. But in going down the rabbit hole of their website, I realized that they also offered nutrition coaching certification, which made sense because I've had a gym membership for however long. And I did always see that if you signed up for a class, it would help you with your diet choices and things like that. But I never went towards it because I always had that background, like I said, in nutrition, and I always knew how to eat well. But it struck a chord with me that if you're going to any type of institution to learn the exercise science and to learn how to tell people how to move their bodies, that has no indication that you food. So even in gaining those insertion certification, I knew that there was something missing there. And I thought that there was another niche that I could fill, being someone interested in nutrition, having that background, able to understand the science behind it and know how to apply it in a way that people could enjoy. Because one of my big missions as a chef is making sure that food is not only accessible to as many people as possible, but sustainable within whatever communities that I serve. So even just the same as being a personal trainer and saying, follow this diet for X amount of weeks and expect these results, it's not sustainable if you don't like what you're eating. You're going to fall off the wagon every day. And I knew also that I didn't have an interest in becoming a dietitian. So as much as I love my mother and who had made her career in education, traditional school was not for me. I made it out of undergrad in 3 years with my bachelor's, and I did not look back. So I knew that going the medical route was far beyond my scope of interest. So learning to become a nutrition coach, I learned to be able to integrate those diagnoses from registered dietitians and just primary doctors and physicians in general. And again, create sustainable meal plans for people that would help them promote their health goals. And I realized also that part of that sustainability was being able to teach people how to do that. And it was important for me, knowing people from so many different walks of life and having worked with people from so many different walks of life and so many different types of abilities, it was extremely important for me to make sure that those things in our Western world could be adapted to wherever it was that they came from. So more and more, and I think it's something to be said that we realize as we get older how much we really are like our parents. So the older I got, and as much as I say school is not for me, that education is absolutely paramount. And if my mother taught me nothing else, it was that you have to get an education to support the life that you want to live. Whatever kind of life it is, you need to know all of the ins and outs about it and beyond if you have time for that. And you're going to make time for it because education is important. So give me that with that bug in my ear and knowing that I just felt such a mission in my heart to make sure that people understood what they were eating and understood what the doctors were saying and understood what the trainers were saying and understood what you could do with food stamps and understand what the supplemental nutrition program really is and how it can really benefit you and understanding that you're paying your personal chef to meal prep for you. But do you know what you're eating? What happens if we hit another COVID and you can't afford it? All of those types of thoughts and scenarios just culminated to the ultimate decision that I needed to teach people how to get it done themselves. So I still cook and I still provide the services for the people who don't want to, but I make sure that the education component is always accessible.
Oh, love it. Love it. And what you're really talking about is pulling together several disciplines, and it's very interdisciplinary. And your undergraduate degree, as I understand, is in sociology, correct? Many of our guests have had careers or journeys that have not been, I start with A and I go to B. It's a lot of different changes. Could you talk a little bit about that, how sociology has played into your career?
In the most unexpected ways, I will start by saying that because I was just convinced that I was never going to use this degree. Okay. But knowing simply how to read social cues, that was a big part of just understanding the psychology of large groups. That's essentially what sociology is. So being able to walk into a room and adapt whatever I'm trying to bring, whatever message I'm trying to convey, learning how to connect with people of different demographics, learning how to bridge those gaps as well, recognizing where there are discrepancies, especially when it comes to things that where you realize like there's an affluent neighborhood right next to a neighborhood that has no grocery stores, right? So you have the most affluent neighborhoods that are adjacent to food deserts. How do we bridge those gaps? How do we teach people in one neighborhood how to use their resources for good in one way? How do we teach the other neighborhood how to access those resources in the best way possible for them? So sociology taught me that, or my degree helped me realize that there is a way to bring that all together. If you understand the fundamentals of how groups of people work and move and flow from one place to the next, you can understand how to bridge those gaps as they come.
Interesting. And as you were talking, you brought in a whole other discipline area of regional community planning and city planning. And as our cities are divided purposefully or not, and economically. And so thank you for addressing all of that. Just brilliant. So as you mentioned earlier that you've done some work with Buffalo Public Schools, and then you also have worked with Evergreen Health for community classes. Can you talk about those classes? Because again, the range of people that you're working with just is a wide span.
Gosh, what can I say about the classes? I love them. That is what I never want to stop doing, right? So when I stopped catering and when I stopped doing private chef work and when I stopped doing all the other things that are associated under the Revel umbrella, I never want to stop doing cooking classes. I teach kids. My youngest class was a group of two-year-olds at the daycare center at Buffalo State College. And that was also my first cooking class. teaching them color recognition through food and teaching them texture and fine motor skills just through different fruits and vegetables. And then taking that class with those fruits and vegetables and taking it to the next level of students in high school and middle schoolers and teaching them how to combine those to discover different flavor profiles and things like smoothies, right? And then taking that to the next level to adults who in any walk of life need to understand that eating the rainbow means that every color is going to provide you with different nutrients and vitamins and minerals. And then taking that even further to different demographics where access is an issue and being able to teach them the difference between fresh, canned, and frozen fruits and vegetables and how to read labels and how to create your grocery list so that you're getting the best bang for your buck. And then taking that and just doing community education again on supplemental nutrition and where those grocery stores are. And for me, that includes going to all those grocery stores and farmers markets and stands. And because I do have the power to do, you have to remember that access to living in a food desert often means you don't even have access to these other neighborhoods where you can use your resources. You don't have a way to get there. You don't want to get all the way out there and find out that it's not worth it. So a part of my job in those communities has become doing the costing and the comparison shopping and the research, and then being able to teach them, this is what you should spend your money on. So while we go from teaching kids colors through food all the way up to the best way to access said food, it just reinforces the idea that food is a great equalizer. And then being able to take any topic, right? Fruit and veggies and taking them all the way across the spectrum that way. I have been able to do that with a number of things, not just different foods, but even different foods that don't come from one specific culture where we find foods in different cultures. I had a class yesterday with fourth and fifth graders, and we talked about the tomato. How did the tomato end up in all these different Italian recipes? But then we also see them in a bunch of Middle Eastern recipes. And we also see them in Caribbean staples like sofrito. How, right? How does that one tomato make it all the way around the world? And there we were able to break down stereotypes about different xenophobic ideals and helping even these kids, helping them understand that you can break down barriers just by saying, I know tomatoes, you have sofrito, I have marinara sauce, I have this red curry in my home. All of those different things. So not only does it teach kids, like I said, this color recognition, these super basic things, the nutrition aspect of it, and then just a cultural unification aspect as well. So over the years, the classes have evolved into all those different types of things. But whether you throw a type of cuisine or an ingredient at me, I can take it from that very rudimentary elementary level all the way up to whatever adult demographic needs, whatever type of services, I'll take those curriculums and adapt them as needed.
Yes. And during the whole podcast, I just listened to you really just interdisciplinary because you've mentioned inclusivity and geography and how all of that is combined. And sometimes education-wise, we feel that nutrition and culinary are two separate worlds, but you're really talking tonight about how they work together. Could you talk just a little bit more about your thoughts
sure.
on that?
I believe truly that you can't have one without the other. You can't have an understanding of nutrition without an understanding of culinary and even the most basic ways. Because with dietetics, you learn the science of things, and sometimes that depends on the breakdown of a certain ingredient. If you process it a certain way, it yields different nutrients. And if you cook it too long, you lose these other nutrients and things of that nature. So you really can't understand nutrition from a scientific level without understanding culinary processes to understand why if I eat this raw apple, it'll yield different benefits than if I juice it, than if I bake it, than if I cook it. And when you're really committed to actually learning the full breadth of nutrition or dietetics or anything like that, you have to be committed to understanding the culinary processes that help those ingredients give way to the material that you're learning. And I just really believe that you shouldn't have one without the other. But if you do, I commit to help you, whatever you don't have, I help fill both gaps. Because the gap does exist, but it's really just become my mission to bridge it.
Well, thanks for bridging it. I do want to talk about your work as a private chef, because that's oftentimes viewed as glamorous. And we have chefs on TikTok and Instagram showing their work. Oh, so what is it like being a private chef? And are you a celebrity if you have one? Or are there's a wide range of people that do?
I'm in it for the personal connection. I don't market myself to the most affluent clients. And I work with the clients that need me. So I have had the privilege of catering holiday dinners, but I've also had the privilege of donating my services to charity auctions and doing them for free and just coming into people's homes and helping them. I had a holiday dinner one year where the recipient of the culinary for the private chef service, she just wanted me to help her learn how to create these recipes that family members had left behind. And then, like I said, I've done dinner parties and wine tasting events and all the cute stuff, anniversary dinners, all that fun stuff. But then I've also worked with clients one-on-one to teach some fundamentals. I work with kids as well, private chef work with kids, which where I really just become like a one-on-one instructor. I've become a private chef for clients who get medical diagnoses and just simply don't know how to cook for themselves anymore, but I work alongside them. So again, that education just always comes into play. And I don't choose, I think about it often. Like, you might see me one day do a whole revamp to my Instagram page, and then all of a sudden I'm doing cooking classes. But as for right now, I really relish in the personal connections of those things. So it's not really glamorous, but it is extremely fulfilling for the route that I to do the private chef work.
And impactful, too. And so thank you for sharing that, because Well, I believe many people have a misconception about private chef work and that it is for celebrities only and
exactly.
Things like
but
that.
Again, it wouldn't serve me well to say, yes, I believe that everybody should have access to sustainability, to healthy food and good food, and then put $1,000 an hour price tag on things. That doesn't make logical sense. Oh, finding, again, it's always for me about bridging that gap and making sure that people need food, right? We need to eat well. It's a form, to me, of self-care. It is a form of health and wellness. And in a world where those rights are really treated as privileges, who am I to move forward with that idea that only people of a certain demographic or only people of a certain tax bracket should have access to it? That doesn't sit well with my philosophy about food. So I just simply couldn't run my business that way.
Thanks for doing what you do, really. As you think about the future and your business, what are some of your aspirations for yourself and for your business or new ventures that you're thinking about?
I would like to expand. It's been in the virtual sense, though. I want to actually create some cookbooks of the things that I've done over the years. I would like to put all of the different types of curriculum that I just have personally. I would like to find a way to create that access because in the most humble way possible, I feel like what I do is very unique. But I also feel like so many people could benefit from that impact outside of Buffalo, New York. So my next steps are to figure out how do I reach the masses, essentially, with the things that I do here. And that, to me, looks like moving my business into the virtual space. I've recently taken on another position working with an entire new demographic, and it's with the New York State offices for persons with developmental disabilities. So I'm learning even more how to reach different demographics and learning the needs of an entirely different world, it seems, But again, just moving forward and learning how to bridge those gaps and working more with entities that can help me further my mission across the state and in educational systems, either traditional like school systems or alternative education systems. So again, for me, it's all about creating, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh gosh, I'm so sorry. Immortalizing almost my work, right? And just making collections in different ways. And then again, being able to sell them consistently, because I think we all want to make money in our sleep. And I'd love to be able to sell a cookbook at 2 a.m. while I'm back asleep. That's my goal as well.
Oh, well, I love that goal. And let us know when the cookbook comes out, because we will help share it out there with everyone. So what advice do you have for aspiring entrepreneurs or people that want to start their business and want to also make a social impact with their business?
And I think the first thing that I would say, we always think to know your niche, right? There is success in knowing exactly where you want to be, but there is also success in being flexible. There is success in learning how to pivot and understanding that your target market doesn't have to be your only market. You can master one thing and move on to the next. And you shouldn't deny yourself opportunities to explore new options for yourself and your business. Because as you can see, just because you think you're in one space doesn't mean you can't be in 1,000 doing exactly what you love. And then in terms of making an impact, I think it's important to make connections. I'm also part of the Buffalo Urban League Young Professionals, and they were the organization that first connected me with Buffalo Public Schools. They were the organization that first connected me with Evergreen Health. They were the organization that first connected me with the National MBA Association, and I was able to do classes with them that way. They've connected me with different fraternities and sororities that have yielded online cooking classes that had national reach. So find somewhere to make connections, whether it's your church, whether it's your social group, whether it's your fraternity, your sorority, even if it's LinkedIn and just like your alumni association for your high school or your college, you have to find a way to make connections. And in doing so, think about how you would want people to approach you. One of the things that I teach my students when they, my middle schoolers and high schoolers, when they make new friends is, what's the first way that you can show respect to a new person? Because it doesn't have to be a friend. Understand me. It does not have to be a friend. You don't have to go out making friends. Connections is very different than thinking that you're making friends. But how do you approach them in a respectful way and say, I'm interested in being a part of whatever you've got going on? How do you make yourself a student, essentially? And that starts with, one, being committed to learn, and two, having a willingness to adapt your learning style. Because for one group, it might be, we want you to come into our space and break bread with us and learn this is how we fellowship. And in other spaces, it might be, well, I need you to read this to understand why we do what you do or why we do what we do. And in other spaces, it might be, come out and get your hands in the dirt and work from the ground up with us. Or whatever it is, you have to be open to connecting with people and meeting them where they're at. Because at the end of the day, that's all we really want people to do for us and show that respect that way. But you have to learn how to give essentially what you're trying to get out of life.
Oh, beautifully said. Excellent advice for anyone out there. Oh, my goodness. So our last question that we ask every guest on the podcast is, how do you define innovation?
How would I define innovation? That's a really good question. I think that I would define innovation as the process of fluidity as it comes to, or as it relates to, business and different really any category. So it could be the process of forward motion, I think, and the process of bettering yourself through whatever discipline you find yourself in. I would also define it as a creative flow of events that would serve the purpose of bettering whatever field that you're in. So I think there's probably a way to condense that and use a few less words, but in general, that's always the innovation.
Oh, no, that's a nice definition, and weaving in that education and learning, important part of it. So thank you for that definition. And thank you for being here. So appreciate this. This was wonderful. And so this wraps up another episode of Innovation Insights Podcast. Thank you, Chef L, for joining us today and sharing your incredible journey and insights and the interdisciplinary work that you're doing to make a social impact. Your dedication to your craft and to the community is truly inspiring, and it's clear that your entrepreneurial spirit and culinary expertise are really making a significant impact. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in. If Chef L's story inspires you and you want to learn more about Ravel Culinary Creations and Core Cuisine, check out her website and follow her on social media. We'll make sure that information is at the end of the podcast. But stay connected with her and watch her latest projects and upcoming projects and community initiatives. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast for more stories like Chef L's, and to join us next time as we continue to explore innovative ideas and the brilliant minds behind them. I am Dr. Yolanda Sanders. I'm signing off until next time. Keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.